Hello from the MedOnline team. In the beginning of this June, we were very lucky to be able to attend the world's largest oncology conference in 2019, the ASCO annual meeting in Chicago. Experts from all disciplines discussed the state of the art in oncology and the latest clinical trials and analyzed their impact on clinical practice. Welcome to the MedOnline conference podcast summarizing the ASCO 2019 highlights. Over the past few days, we have been asking Swiss experts about their personal take-home messages from the conference. Two of them were Professor Dr. Reinhard Dummer, University Hospital of Zurich, and Professor Dr. Olivier Michelien, University Hospital of Lausanne, who discussed about where we are in immunotherapy of melanoma. One big topic this year was again the use of biomarkers to select for patients who benefit the most from immunotherapy. Here is what Professor Dummer explains about developments in this area.
Well, I think it's dramatic how a lot of information that we know only from basic research is now entering into the clinic. So let's say 5 years ago, we did some molecular analysis, but this was more or less a scientific procedure. But now everything is in the clinic. So we have abstracts on treatments that include mutational burden of the tumor, that include reactions of the immune system such as interferon gamma signature, but at the same time T-cell populations are monitored, for example, are macrophages coming up or down during a treatment and cytokine levels. So the complexity of the analysis that we face today has increased dramatically.
Dr. Michelien adds to that.
I totally agree. I think we are seeing a lot of single biomarkers that have some level of signal, but probably not enough to be conclusive. And I think most of the people in the field would agree with the fact that we probably need a multidimensional biomarker at some point. And so that's an example of this. This morning, Jeffrey Weber presented an analysis of 067. He looked at the sera from baseline and was able to look at IL-6 and CRP as being negative prognostic factor in this patient population. It's interesting because there you already have directly a link to an action because IL-6 can be targeted, and so there is now a trial that will address this question. And so clearly I think this biomarker field is extremely dynamic. It's the future. We need to be able to select patient better, but most likely it's going to be a complex biomarker that will do the job.
Another burning topic this year was an update of the CheckMate 204 trial, where researchers looked at the response of melanoma brain metastases to combination therapy with nivolumab and ipilimumab. This is how Professor Dummer comments the trial.
Well, brain metastases are always a challenging problem in the clinic. And till recently, we have used chemotherapeutic drugs such as temozolomide and whole brain irradiation. And over the last years, we have learned a lot. At this ASCO, we see new and more mature data on the combination of ipilimumab and nivolumab in patients with brain metastases. These data are encouraging on one side because the promising results are confirmed. However, there is now for the first time a subgroup analysis on patients who have symptomatic versus non-symptomatic disease. And in the patient with symptomatic brain mets, the response rate are maybe 50% of the responses that we see in the non-symptomatic patient population. So this shows there is some progress. However, in critical and ill and sick patients with symptoms, we are still waiting for effective therapies.
Are we going to need the adjuvant whole brain radiotherapy any longer if it works?
Yeah, so there is a paper on this. I think the paper actually summarizes what the clinic has started to do. I think whole brain radiation does not bring any additional value after stereotactic radiosurgery, and the study clearly shows that most of the clinics have deviated from using that. And I think this is nice that we now have this confirmation that we can spare this aspect of treatment to patients.
Another one of our interview partners was world-renowned lung cancer expert Professor Dr. Solange Peters from the Central University Hospital Lausanne, who filled us in on the recent developments in the fields of lung cancer. According to her, the theme of this year's ASCO was consolidation of the knowledge that was accumulated over the past few years. One of the most important lung cancer studies this year represents one on long-term survivorship in non-small cell lung cancer patients treated with immunotherapy, the 5-year update of the KEYNOTE-01 trial.
Remember the phase 1 trial, kind of a landmark trial, having proven, among others, but one of the most important trials to prove the activity of immunotherapy in late lines of non-small cell lung cancer. At 5 years, this trial is very interesting because it demonstrates the existence of long-term survivors. And these long-term survivors are more frequently encountered in the context of high PD-L1 expression. And just to give two numbers, with high PD-L1, more than 50% of the cancer cells having PD-L1 being treated frontline with pembrolizumab, 30% of them are alive at 5 years. And if you think about this patient receiving pembro later on with high PD-L1, it's 25%. So suddenly it changes the landscape and potentially the paradigm of long-term survivorship in non-small cell lung cancer.
So when putting these results in context with previous experiences, it looks like this.
What is important here is to remember what we know about long-term survival now. Long-term survival in unselected patients is 10 to 15% of patients being treated by a monotherapy of checkpoints, but you can improve this 15% by probably looking at PD-L1 and also, very importantly, by having the patients being treated early with immunotherapy. For unknown reason, when you look at this landmark 5 years, patients who are naive to treatment will benefit more from immunotherapy. It might be about how, effective is your immune system to mount a response before or after chemotherapy. The last thing which is important as a clinician is one of the most important predictive factors for long-term survival is to present with a response. If you have a patient with a partial or complete response, he suddenly sits on a curve of survival which is quite amazing. So that's really something we have to keep in mind. PD-L1 survival, naive patients.
Another lung highlight of this year's ASCO was, according to Professor Peters, the trial results for small non-small cell lung cancer patient subsets, which she describes like this.
In particular, in the non-squamous subtype, many lung cancers are characterized by genetic alterations, drivers. These drivers have the potential to create the cancer. We know EGFR, we know ALK, and we know also a series of small entities with very rare alterations. I'm thinking about ROS, RET, NTRK, BRAF, HER2, so very rare entities that deserve, however, to potentially be targeted. And this was the meeting for these rare targets. Many targeted therapies, new drugs, have been demonstrated here in the context of phase 1 or 2 trials. All these drugs give rise to a response rate of 50% or more. And of course, they all have these little subsets of toxicities, but they are all quite manageable in the way they can be orally given and supported for months, even more than a year. And last but not least, what about EGFR? So EGFR has been evaluated here in terms of being a target for frontline therapy in an alternative way. We all use osimertinib, or we all would like to use osimertinib frontline, the third generation TKI in Europe. But here the colleagues have again interrogated the first generation EGFR TKI. So one group was presented the combination of erlotinib and ramucirumab, an anti-VEGF receptor, which has been already approved in second line, trying to maximize this interaction between VEGF and EGFR pathways. And like we knew from bevacizumab, you can strongly improve the PFS by giving ramucirumab, the anti-angiogenic, with erlotinib frontline.
Also, Dr. Sascha Rothschild from the University Hospital Basel gave us his opinions about his lung cancer highlights. Additionally to the studies mentioned by Professor Peters, he commented on the expanding field of neoadjuvant immunotherapy, where 2 studies have been presented on the efficacy of atezolizumab and nivolumab and ipilimumab.
The LCMC3 study, so that was a window of opportunity study where patients with locally advanced stage non-small cell lung cancer stage 1B to 3A received atezolizumab, two cycles of atezolizumab before surgery. And the primary endpoint of this study, the study included 101 patients, and the primary endpoint of the study was major pathological remission rate. Major pathological response was defined as less than 10% viable tumor cells in the resection specimen. And in this study, this rate was found to be 19%. So 19% of patients had a major pathological remission, which is certainly an intriguing result. And many more patients have had a response in the resection specimen. The second study, similar setting, also locally advanced stage disease, resectable disease. In this study, the NeoStar study, that was a randomized study, patients either received nivolumab alone or the combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab. And again, response rate, pathological response rate was the primary endpoint. And again, we see a major pathological response rate of approximately 20%, so it was 17% actually for nivolumab mono, and it was more than 30% for the combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab.
Additionally, we asked Dr. Rothschild what he found most interesting this year in the field of head and neck cancer. He particularly mentioned the final analysis of the KEYNOTE-048 trial that supported the use of PD-1 inhibition via pembrolizumab or pembrolizumab combined with chemotherapy as first-line therapy over the standard chemotherapy extreme in patients with head and neck squamous cell carcinoma and a high PD-L1 expression. Here, these patients were defined as having a CPS score of 1% or higher, as well as 20% or higher. While there was a small survival benefit for the whole cohort, the overall improvement was best in patients with a CPS of over 20%.
I think for patients that really need a fast and rapid response in the metastatic or recurrent metastatic setting, we probably still have to consider chemotherapy, probably in combination with pembrolizumab as a standard of care. For many patients, as we know, probably response is not the main goal, but we have to consider toxicity and we have to consider overall survival. And in this patient population, I would think that we should do PD-L1 staining, the CPS score, and for patients with a CPS score above 20%, I think based on these results, pembrolizumab mono is a new standard of care.
Very similar for what was reported for melanoma, lung cancer and head and neck cancer sounded the conclusion of this year's ASCO drawn by Dr. Richard Katomas from Kantonsspital Chur, Graubünden for genitourinary cancers.
The theme of this year's ASCO, I feel, is really about consolidation of the knowledge we have had over the past couple of years.
For him, one of the most important studies was an update of the KEYNOTE-426 trial that looked at the combination of a PD-1 inhibitor, pembrolizumab, and a selective VEGF receptor inhibitor, axitinib, as a first-line treatment of renal cell carcinoma. The update specifically looked at the results in the prognostic subgroups.
It was very interesting to see that all prognostic groups do benefit from this combination treatment of pembrolizumab and axitinib, although it has to be said that if the patient has intermediate or poor prognosis, he does even benefit more than for the good prognosis patients. They also looked at sarcomatoid histology subgroups, and they do indeed benefit even more. So this is certainly a very interesting drug combination. What we can say today is that for the first line treatment of metastatic renal cell carcinoma, really combinations of IO and IO or combinations of immunotherapy with TKI inhibitors are really the standard of care for most of our patients. Maybe for patients with favorable risk, as the discussant alluded to, we can also start with active surveillance before we start treatment.
Also, an update of the Carmina study that looked at the impact of cytoreductive nephrectomy before starting with sunitinib treatment was presented. Last year, it was already shown that cytoreductive nephrectomy is not beneficial for most patients, but there was still a lot of discussion on whether patients who have lower volume disease and an intermediate risk score would still benefit from cytoreductive nephrectomy, As a conclusion of what was presented this year, Dr. Katomas stated this.
Actually, it is the case that if a patient has intermediate risk disease based on only one risk factor, he can still benefit from cytoreductive nephrectomy, as we have seen today. So for these patients who have low volume disease and who have only one risk factor, putting them into the intermediate risk group, we should probably still consider cytoreductive nephrectomy as a standard of care before starting systemic treatment.
Also, there have been some news for urothelial carcinoma.
And finally, the most interesting topic in urothelial carcinoma, I think, was the phase 2 data on enfortumab vedotin. This is an antibody drug conjugate that is directed against Nectin-4, which can be found of almost all urothelial cancer cells. And we have seen phase 1 data at earlier meetings, and today phase 2 data, still single arm, were presented for patients who had been pre-treated with chemotherapy and with immune-oncology drugs. And in these patients, as third-line treatment, this drug, enfortumab vedotin, achieved almost 50% response rate and a median overall survival of over 11 months. So it looks as if this drug is going to get very soon FDA accelerated approval, and phase 3 studies are already ongoing. And it looks like this may be a future standard of care for patients who have had 2 prior lines of treatment.
These highlights make us look forward to the future of cancer diagnosis and therapy with hope and anticipate the ESMO meeting later this year, where some follow-ups of these studies might be presented. And with this, we would like to thank our experts for giving us their opinions and you for listening. See you in September.